The committee will come to order, please. This is the Senate State Affairs Committee. It is Thursday, April 20th. All members of the committee are present for a quorum. We will have one item on the schedule for today. It is House Bill 300. We have Representative Vic Coring here as the prime sponsor of the bill. Actually, it's by his committee on the House side, House Special Committee on Oil and Gas. So at this time, Vic, why don't you come forward, and if you have any staff member that you'd like with you, that would be fine, and present the bill to us, please.
Chairman Turow, thank you very much for the opportunity to be able to hear House Bill 300. I know this is the only bill on your calendar, and I appreciate you taking time to come down to hear the legislation. Thank you as well, members of the Senate State Affairs Committee. I'm Vic Coring. I'm representing District 14, which is the MATSU. House Bill 300 is a bill that requires that the public position of the three-member commission on the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission have what we've referred to as a fundamental working knowledge of the oil and gas industry. Currently, as it stands, the position doesn't require any kind of experience, so the governor could appoint just anybody that he chooses to on that, and that person may not have the necessary knowledge to be able to perform their duties as needed. And I'm concerned that in the future, if we do not require that the individual have at least a fundamental knowledge, then that person would have to go in there and, as capable as they may be, and there have been very capable individuals appointed to that in the past, they're going to have to, basically go in as a, I hate to use the word greenhorn, but with no experience, they're going to have to learn from scratch. And with the industry being as technically sophisticated as it is, and increasingly so with new technologies and so forth, not to mention the fact that this particular commission is so important in terms of overseeing the production of petroleum on the North Slope, we feel that that person should have at least a fundamental knowledge of that industry that they regulate. Kind of like with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, that's a very important one too, and I would equate that one to very, very similar in terms of importance to this state, not as much as the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, but nevertheless important. But that one does require a substantial experience, either as a practicing attorney or having a degree in finance and economics. So if it works well with the commission of that nature and that significance, it makes sense to have the same standards with the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. And it is just a three-member panel as well, so it is really important to have an individual on that commission in the public capacity that has a good, solid understanding. The bill does have a zero fiscal note, and it is supported by the commission itself. And as a matter of fact, my understanding is that the chairman of that commission is online to testify to the bill, and he was the individual, that's Mr. Norman, that encouraged me to put forth this legislation late last year. There is should be in your packet anyway, a letter of support from the commissioners, all three of them that currently serve in that role do support the bill, and they've submitted a letter to that effect in your packet. So that's essentially the legislation. I'd be pleased to answer any questions that the committee members may have. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Do members have questions? Senator Elton.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Representative Coring. I mean, just a couple of terms of art, mm-hmm. but before I do that, what's the position of the governor's office? I mean, this constrains his or her ability to appoint whomever they want. Yeah. Have you heard from them on their position on the bill?
We've actually worked with Kevin Jardellin's legislation, the liaison for the governor, and initially they were concerned about the bill because I had it pretty narrowly defined. I had specified the education and the work experience that I would like to see the individual have, and they thought that would constrict it too narrowly and restrict the potential pool of applicants. So from there, it evolved into a more generic statement saying that it requires a fundamental knowledge of the industry as opposed to specific requirements.
Go ahead.
Which is a perfect segue, Mr. Chair, into the next question that I was going to ask. I mean, the bill now notes that the person shall have training or experience, mm-hmm. and a fundamental understanding, and you in your presentation said at least a fundamental knowledge mm-hmm. of the business. What is fundamental knowledge? I mean, heaven forbid, somebody could say I do because I served on the Senate Resources Committee.
Yeah.
I mean, is that a fundamental knowledge, or what is a fundamental knowledge?
Well, we haven't actually clearly defined that, to be honest with you. We've left that open so that we can make sure that the potential applicants are substantial for the benefit of the governor, whoever that may be, to appoint that individual. So really, a fundamental knowledge could be somebody that has experience as an oil and gas chair, which I serve as. Could be somebody with a petroleum engineering degree, or somebody without a degree that's worked on the North Slope for, in a management capacity for 5 or 10 years. So it's a very generic and vague statement, and it was left that way intentionally.
Okay, I guess my comment, and the sponsor can feel free. I mean, it seems to me that this is the loophole that gives the governor almost absolute discretion to appoint whomever, because fundamental knowledge could be a banker who serviced an oil field service company, for example. I mean, it seems to me that without a definition of fundamental understanding or training and experience that's necessary, that that we're not fundamentally changing the commission. We're tweaking it, but the tweak is generic enough to allow just about anybody.
Right. Well, I'd be pleased to suggest. Let me back up a little bit. Choose my words differently. I think John Norman, the chairman of the commission, would be helpful in responding to that as well, and offer an explanation as to why they suggested that.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Why don't we go to Mr. Norman and get his testimony before we have any further questions. Mr. Norman, are you online?
I am online, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. If you would go ahead with any prepared comments you have today.
All right. I have some brief comments, and I have with me Commissioner Dan Seamount, and then when I conclude, we'll be happy to respond to any questions. First of all, we want to say we appreciate this opportunity to be able to provide comments on this particular piece of legislation. We have thought about it when it was presented to us, and we have concluded that as a commission, we could support it. If enacted, we think it will further the goal of having knowledgeable and responsible oil and gas regulation in the state of Alaska. By way of background, the commission, which is often referred to as the AOGCC, is one of the oldest, and perhaps because of the significance of the oil and gas industry to the economy of our state, it's one of the most important regulatory agencies in Alaska. It was created in 1955 under Chapter 40 of the session laws of the then territory. And this was a remarkable act of foresight by the legislature at that time, because later, when oil was discovered at Swanson River, Alaska already had in place a commission and a regulatory structure to ensure and oversee the orderly development of gas within the state. The AOGCC consists, as you all know, of three commissioners appointed by the governor, confirmed by the legislature for 6-year staggered terms. Over the years, the qualifications of the commissioners have been fine-tuned and refined several times to keep pace with advances and technological developments in the industry. In the statute, which is now before you, 3105-009, one member is required, as you can see, to be a petroleum engineer. Originally, it was simply an engineering position. The second, a geologist with petroleum experience. Currently, the third position requires no training or experience by way of qualification. The AOGCC, however, is a full-time working commission with responsibility to oversee daily the work of hundreds of industry professionals operating in our state. Commission exercises the police powers of the state and has jurisdiction over every well drilled in search of oil and gas in Alaska, not just on state lands, but on federal lands, the 40 plus million acres of native lands throughout the state is where the commission's jurisdiction runs. Our work has expanded in the past several years. It's becoming increasingly complex as the new innovations are arrived at in the industry. The commission regulates to prevent waste. See injection wells, which are used for enhanced oil recovery, and regulates subsurface of disposal of produced water and drilling fluids. The commission also has as its responsibility to safeguard confidentiality of highly sensitive proprietary information and is charged with protecting the public interest in all of these respects, including among other things, ensuring protection of underground sources of fresh water. Through very technically detailed regulations and hundreds of conservation orders, the commission on a daily basis guides the production of hydrocarbons from the state's many and varied oil and gas reservoirs. The commission has authority, including subpoena powers, to conduct hearings, compel attendance of witnesses, engage in rulemaking, and to adjudicate and resolve disputes between conflicting owners of oil and gas rights. When necessary, the commission can impose penalties and can also order unitization of pools and integration of interests to avoid multiplicity of facilities and to also ensure overall greater recovery of valuable oil and gas resources. We believe the change proposed by this bill is in keeping with a recognition of the increasing complexity of the oil and gas industry and the need for Alaska's oil and gas commissioners to have some training or experience which will equip them to be able to regulate the industry, which in so many ways is critically important to our state, not just from a financial standpoint, but also from the impact it can have in terms of environmental impact, safety, and all of the other ways that this industry impacts our state. We do have a website, and there is a detailed description and listing of the powers and duties of the commission there. So with your permission, Mr. Chairman, I'll conclude with that. Commissioner Dan Seamount is here with me, and we'd be pleased to respond to any questions.
Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Norman? Senator Elton, and then Senator Wagner.
Okay. Thanks, Chair Norman. I appreciate your comments, and I appreciate your perspective as chair of the commission. And I couldn't help but think, as I was listening to you go through the recipe of your duties, that, you know, those are the same kind of duties that we're charged with occasionally as legislators. In addition to that, I mean, we deal with education issues, Gulf of Alaska rationalization in the commercial fishing industry, education, a whole bunch of others, and none of us have job descriptions that require any experience or knowledge in any of those arenas. And to me, the notion of having a public member appointed by the governor is it gives the governor latitude to bring and involve somebody from outside of the box to the issues with a perspective that may not be a perspective that has been honed over many years with specific experience. And I also noted as part of the material on the deal that the three commissioners have a staff of 20 or 21 people, almost all of them with specific expertise. And so a long way to ask a question about whether or not there is value to having somebody outside the box that is a hard worker and willing to work with staff as you deal with the complex issues in much the same way legislators do it with complex issues.
Yes, Representative Elton, through the chair, I think those are excellent comments, and I've thought a lot about this. And the concept of having someone outside the box, I think there is a comparison with the duties of legislators, but legislators are necessarily generalists. You're required to deal on a broad range of issues, and that's properly so. The demands on you are tremendous. This is a very specialized agency, and in fact, that's recognized by the courts. We have a huge number of things that pass through the agency, and our track record is very good in prevailing in the courts and the courts generally defer to the expertise of an agency such as this. I think I'd respond to you this way. On a daily basis, there is at least one permit and then numerous applications as well as conservation orders passing across the desk. And there really is not time for OJT. And you have to know the questions to ask, and you have to be able, I am at this moment in time the third commissioner, and you have to be able to hold your own. The commissioners need that we deliberate, we go back and forth, and that is how decisions are made. But it's within a fairly technical area of development, and so I have arrived at the viewpoint that exposure and understanding is better than having someone with no knowledge or experience. I'll put it that way. But I do want to add this, which is, I think, a very important thing to hang on to. That knowledge or experience does not necessarily in any way mean alignment with the interests of the oil industry. And there have been, in the past, commissioners that have developed expertise through the oil and gas section in the Attorney General's office. In my own experience, I have represented homesteaders on the Kenai Peninsula. I've represented private property owners in the Mat Valley. I have represented Alaska's Native Corporations, Cook Inlet Region, and others in negotiations on the opposite side of the table with the oil industry. So I do believe that this commission requires commissioners that know the questions to ask, that know how to send the work back to staff to make sure it's done right. I don't think Alaskans expect anything less, but I think it's an important consideration to hang on to for future governors and the legislature, that experience need not in any way be derived simply by reaching over and pulling someone from the industry who has an industry mindset. I would cite, I suppose, over that I'm doing some quick math in my head, and Commissioner Seamount, correct me if I'm wrong, but probably in the past 18 months, we have fined industry approaching $2 million, which is a lot. And we have issued numerous enforcement orders, and so we by no means have a mindset of industry, but I think we do know the questions to ask. We know whenever presentations are made to us if the engineering and the geological data is faulty, and I think by having a mix of commissioners, all of which have this general understanding, I think more often than not, you're going to have a better commission. But I do understand where you are coming from in the asking of your question, and I myself have asked myself that very same question. I hope that answer is satisfactory.
Thank you, Chair Norman.
Thank you. Other questions? Senator Wagner.
Well, I was basically going to ask the same question. Hello, commissioners. But maybe I frame it a little differently. Sometimes it's the person with the least amount of knowledge that asks some of the most pointed questions as to why we're doing this way, and why can't we do it another way. And sometimes you get the mindset that everybody's thinking along the same path, and maybe that's not the healthiest thing to have. I looked at your staff. You got a tremendous staff there. And I would think somebody with the not necessarily the the background, but somebody that's used to being a decision maker and reviewing recommendations from staff and analyzing that information could be just as effective in some cases, in most cases, if not more effective than people that may be more familiar with the information being provided them by staff. Because I'm sure, John, that you you and Dan, and when you deliberate, I'm sure, and you had to understand what your staff is saying, but I'm sure you get a lot of recommendation from your staff, don't you?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Wagner, and again, I certainly respect that point of view, but we get recommendations from the staff, but then ultimately it's up to the three commissioners to sit down. We relate collegially, but we go back and forth, and I think if you have a third commissioner that does not have experience, that commissioner, frankly, is going to be handicapped. Now, they can ask some basic questions, but we ask questions. I mean, virtually a day doesn't go by, no day goes by that I don't ask a whole lot of questions. And I've now been in the industry for 40 years. Not in the industry, but I've worked in the industry. I've worked in the Attorney General's office. I've worked in private practice. I have geologic training. I have training in oil and gas law. And yet I'm constantly finding myself asking the questions. And I do respectfully say that I think that if someone was not exposed to the workings of the industry and had a good experience, then there's a very steep learning curve. And you also participate in a number of national committees where Alaska's interests need to be articulated at a fairly technical level. And you need to be able to present Alaska's viewpoint there. And again, there isn't a lot of time to slow down for the basic questions. This is a very focused commission, probably one of the most technical. I would say we have PhDs here and engineers, and you've got to know when to challenge them and how to go about it. And I do respect what you say, that sometimes a fundamental viewpoint is capable of doing that. But again, having thought about it, I believe that all things being equal, some experience and familiarity with the industry, not an alignment or a bias toward the industry, but a very good basic understanding of that industry will serve Alaska better in the long run.
Thank you. You've indicated your experience in the industry, your personal experience. And a note here on the sheet that we have that have the history of the different terms and who served in which capacity, and yours starts January 26th. So have you not been confirmed yet?
This is John Norman. You're addressing the question to me?
Yeah.
No, I've been confirmed now for 2 years.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's 2004. I misread the notation here. Okay. And I'm just looking back up the list on the public members. Got Sarah Palin. She was there for a fairly short period of time. Camille Taylor was there for 6 years. Mary Marshburn was there for a relatively short period of time. Now, I'm not sure, and perhaps you or the other commissioner can give us a little bit of history of why the individual served for such a short period of time. But looking back up this list of names, going all the way back to 1979, under the category public member, did we experience problems with the individual that held that position? Are we addressing a problem that we've experienced in the past, or we're trying to address a problem that we may experience in the future?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I think we're trying to address a problem that we may experience in the future. The cutoff period there on that listing reflects a reorganization of the commission, but the commission, as I mentioned, goes back to 1955, and some of the personnel are still around, and they're well known to the commission. In 1969 and 1970, I was legal counsel to the commission, and I've known most of the commissioners, not all of them. I've known most of them through working one way or the other and interacting with the commission. By and large, over the years, the appointments have been what this bill would indicate. There have been people that have held this position, but they've generally had the background and experience. I would not point to any particular individual, and that certainly is not what this is about, and I would not want my testimony, and I know Commissioner Seamount, is a criticism of anyone, but it's simply to try to make it a better commission. The argument that you could advance that I've gone back and forth in my mind is that to have training and experience, you must gain that training and experience from the very industry you're regulating, and therefore you might be tainted. And I've gone around and around on that. I've thought about that a lot over the last 2 years. And then before that, I've had an opportunity to watch that. And I have, that's not been my experience. As I said, there are a variety of ways in which one can gain insights into this important industry without having gained that training in the industry. But even if you did, I think all of you are familiar with people now who are currently serving in public office, various positions who have. They came up through the ranks of industry, but they are very capable of not towing the party line. And so I would, again, return to the idea that I think some knowledge of the industry is better than having someone without knowledge of the industry. Beyond that, I see this simply as a placeholder. Someone else used the term a tweaking of it, and that's really all it is. It's not a crafting of very tight sideboards. It still allows, I think, considerable latitude for future governors and legislators to make a judgment on qualifications.
Okay, thank you. But I guess just getting back to some of the questions that Senator Wagner and Elton were asking, if we've not experienced a problem in the past, this is a board that looks over the sensible utilization and development of the people's resource, and to have the possibility of, you know, a member of the public that doesn't specifically fit into the geologist or petroleum engineer seat be able to sit on the board doesn't seem to have been a problem in the past. Of course, the governor selects a name, but the legislature must confirm them. And so I'm just thinking back to my votes on confirmation. Generally, the discussion when we get together in caucus or just individually, people go down the list and talk about, well, is the person qualified for the spot that they've been selected for? Certainly geologist and engineering, we'd be looking at specific resume information, but in this one in particular, it's a member of the public. And then to Senator Elton's specific questions, the suggested language shall have training or experience that gives a person a fundamental understanding. And I'm not quite sure what all we have achieved there. That's fairly open and subjective. And as he indicated, I would think that Senator Wagner, having served as resources chairman for a number of years now, and specifically the number of oil and gas issues that we have and are currently slogging through, would easily fit that. But yet he doesn't have any particular training in the oil and gas industry. So I guess, Representative Coring, a question for you: with the administration now being supportive of the bill and looking at your original legislation, I guess my suspicion is that they're supportive because although you've changed the words, it still is fairly open-ended. And could they virtually do or suggest that anybody that they chose fill the slot anyway? There's nobody here from the administration to testify. But I'm wondering, in your debates back and forth with them, and you're agreeing to go to this scaled-back language, if they gave an indication to you that they thought your original language was screwed down too tight, and they were not, they were going to oppose it unless you loosen things up.
That's exactly what the scenario was, Mr. Chairman, that they originally did, in fact, oppose the legislation, and they felt that we should make it more generic, which is why we produced the bill that's before you.
Okay, and I see in your original bill here, the person was supposed to be an attorney with a 4-year bachelor's degree and 6 years experience in business management. So you were apparently looking for some specific knowledge set that really doesn't speak to oil and gas at all. But yet now we've changed to the suggestion that it's a person that has a fundamental understanding of oil and gas industry. So for you as prime sponsor, why the switch from the you know, the business background to the oil and gas background?
Well, to be frank with you, when I first drafted the bill, it was just to get something down on paper, and it was to I was just brainstorming, and that was those were the initial thoughts that we had, and we felt that eventually, as the bill evolved, there would be a changes to it. So that was really just a starting point. And in hindsight, I probably should have. In hindsight, I probably would have worded that differently and not been so generic in terms of just mentioning, say, business management experience. I probably would have put in something related to the petroleum industry, petroleum engineering degree or something. But that was about a year and a half, 2 years ago when we drafted that initial bill, and that was just my starting point, understanding that it would very likely change as the time went by and we heard the bill in committee.
Okay. Other questions? Senator Elton, and then Huggins.
Just a question, a generic question, either for one of the commissioners or for the sponsor. I mean, one of the concerns, and I specifically want to address, I really appreciate the comments of the chair about tainting. I think if there is any taint at all, it probably comes through the political process of appointing somebody. I mean, because that's where the politics gets injected. And I mean, my experience has been, with few exceptions, that the commission has not been tainted by inexpertise or bad behavior. And so I appreciated the chair's comments. But one of the concerns that I have is as the bill has evolved, apparently in discussion with the administration, is that if we don't have a definition of what fundamental understanding or training or experience is, what we've done is we've created an opportunity for 61 different interpretations of that, the governor's interpretation and then the interpretation of 60 other legislators. And heaven forbid that somebody ever make an argument that because I've served on Senate resources, I'm qualified for that position. I mean, that would be a mistaken assumption, but given the softness of the language, I mean, a governor could make that argument or any individual legislator could make that argument. I'd be much more comfortable having Senator Wagner on there than myself because I think he's got better training and understanding and a fundamental knowledge. So I guess I'm concerned about and would like to have the sponsor think a little bit about how we have language that doesn't allow for 61 different interpretations of fundamental, for example.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Coring, as I recall, this may be the bill that there was some critique about the former mayor of Wasilla couldn't be on the board because, but as I read this, that probably would not preclude her from doing this. Is that true or false? What do you think?
To be honest with you, Senator Huggins, I don't know if her background had petroleum technology in it, if she had a fundamental knowledge or any kind of experience or training, so I really can't address that. However, those that have suggested that somehow this is directed toward past members, That's absolutely false. And in the case of Sarah Palin, for example, even Tuckerman Babcock, they're both very good friends of mine. I've known Sarah for 30 years, and it has nothing to do with that issue that has actually surfaced by critiques of the critics of the legislation. I would say probably it would have precluded her, frankly, because I'm not aware that she had any background in petroleum technology. So the answer is probably yes.
Right, but in the same token, I'm supposing, based on this language, if she was nominated, that she'd probably be confirmed, just based on the language. That's, I mean, that's, I mean, I guess I come down mm-hmm. closer to where Senator Elton is. Now, as I understand it, the person that sit, the three people that sit on this, it's a relatively well-compensated position. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Which has nothing to do other than it would be attractive to people that were mm-hmm. in it full-time.
Mm, yes, it is.
Yeah. So, I mean, more often than not, there would be a number of people that would want to have the position for a number of reasons, mm-hmm. one of which to serve the state, but they would be well paid to do that. So
yes.
we wouldn't have a shortage of candidates one way or right. the other. But if you tighten this language up, is it your assumption you would not have as much support from the board overall?
That's my expectation, that the administration nor the commissioners would support the legislation as much if we were to tighten it up. Not that we wouldn't have the support and the bill would not be signed into law, but my expectation is it would be tougher if we did not leave it in a vague form as we have right now.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
And do you know, as far as a name being selected or forwarded to the governor for his consideration, would a determination be made by the director of boards and commissions that the person actually met the definition? Mm-hmm. And so there would be sort of a culling as applications and resumes came in to boards and commissions. Would there be an initial sieve that selected out people that mm-hmm. supposedly made the
yes.
cut and those that did not?
I would expect that to be the case, and so the executive director of boards and commissions' role is to recruit people and then to make recommendations to the governor. So I would expect that person to, in fact, be a filter and narrow down a list of applicants to, in fact, present to the governor for consideration.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And, okay, are there any other questions? I think, as is our, you know, our standard here, I'd like to hold the bill, and one of the things that I would like to do is go back and look, and actually, Mr. Norman, can you tell me, you mentioned the list of names that we have here goes back to 1979, and I'm not sure exactly when you worked as staff. Can you tell me, at that time, the designations on the three spots that we have, was that when that language was put into place?
Yes, it originally started out as the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission in the 55 version. Legislator Irene Ryan, the geologist, put that in. It evolved on through, then in statehood, it was brought under the Department of Natural Resources, and there was a petroleum engineer and a geologist and a third member. And that third member was from management of Union Oil Company, as I recall. But to my knowledge, he always behaved with the best interest of the state of Alaska at heart, as generally all of the people have done. And it's evolved that way. I would say for the 40-year history since statehood of the commission, 40-plus, generally speaking, the personnel have all had experience in the industry, with only a few exceptions, and I don't mean to imply there's any problem with those personnel that didn't have come from that background right now. But generally speaking, the appointments did have that background. The original commissioners were Tom Marshall, who's still around, Easy Gilbreth, a very exceptional petroleum engineer, Homer Burrell, then Chad Chatterton, who was also a member of the legislature and a petroleum engineer. And the other names, many of them came up through the ranks within the commission. Several of them, Harry Krugler, Lonnie Smith, were served on the staff of the commission and were then appointed to the commission.
Okay. Well, what I'm interested in, it sounds like you indicated that the designations of the petroleum geologist and petroleum engineer was made at the time of statehood?
No, sir. I think there was some carryover, and it was the governor, and it was the director of mines and so forth, and at some point following statehood, that evolved over, and then it did become a designation of the Petroleum Committee. I can get you this information. I just don't have it at the tip of my tongue right now, but sometime in the mid-60s, it did become recognized that a mining engineer, the level of expertise and the level of development here in Alaska, it was growing to the point where the original designees, the level of skills called for moved away from that. And at that point, there was a petroleum engineer, that was Mr. Marshall that I mentioned, and Mr. Gilbreth, and a petroleum geologist, Mr. Marshall, and then Mr. Burrell. And they served on through the 70s, and then Mr. Chatterton, and I don't have the complete list of all of the commissioners, but the great, great majority of them all had training and experience within the industry. And that's what the industry expects also, is that you will have commissioners that understand the lingo, know what they're talking about, will fairly apply the regulations, but also know whenever someone is attempting to bend the regulations.
Yeah. Okay. And I guess what I'm looking for is the language, the current statutory language that says need not be a certified, trained, or experienced in either the field of petroleum engineering or the field of petroleum geology. You know, it's fairly specific that, you know, they did not need to have that, and my staff is indicating that the change noted in the statutes 1978. So perhaps what I'll do is through the efforts of my staff and working with the prime sponsor here, go back to get a little bit of history on why it was they chose that specific language, why they wanted to have that, you know, not a lot of specific knowledge be required. Not to say that a past legislator has to dictate what we do, but if there's a particular reason why they made that policy call, we should perhaps consider it before we take this step. So with that, is there any other questions from the committee member or Representative Coring? Do you have anything else to add to the debate today?
I do not, other than to thank you for hearing the legislation, and that I'd be pleased to work with you in terms of gathering that information on the history as far as the why did they choose language in the past to identify a needed experience.
Okay. And with that, that will wrap up the schedule for today. Heather, let's see, do we turn in a schedule for Tuesday and Thursday of next week, or just... Yeah, on Tuesday, Senate Bill 293, Senator Elton, that's your bill, and House Joint Resolution 27 will be up on Tuesday. And then on Thursday, we just have bills previously scheduled or heard, so in case we have carry forward or are ready to get back to this bill.
We'll be on 24-hour
anyway. We're likely to be getting, if we're not on 24-hour notice, we will be sometime next week, during the week, I think. So with that, we will adjourn for the day.
Member of the committee, thank you.